You may or may not be familiar with Eric Rudolph. That name, though, may well ring a bell in some of your minds to go back about 15 plus years ago. Eric Rudolph spent 5 years on the FBI's most wanted list, 1998 to 2003. His most notable crime was the bombing in Atlanta during the Olympics. He was a misguided individual, obviously. And even though he bombed abortion clinics, it's never right to do wrong in order to try to do something that's right. That 5 years that he spent on the FBI's most wanted list, he spent hiding out in the Appalachian Mountains, not far from the Great Smoky Mountain National Park on the North Carolina side. I remember at the time there were all sorts of folks commenting on the fact that he was an expert woodsman and all this, and they may never find him. After he was caught in Murphy, North Carolina in 2003, he explained that he had survived those 5 years camping in the woods, eating acorns and salamanders, and pilfering vegetables from folks' gardens, stealing grain from a grain silo, and raiding dumpsters in nearby towns. That's a real life there, isn't it? I want to throw that information out there for you because I want you to know how difficult that was, even from someone that was supposed to be suited for such a thing. That is a feat, to spend 5 years hiding out in the woods. But it wasn't a life. He doesn't have to worry about where his meals come from by now, by the way. That's provided by the U.S. government. But anyway, I tell you that because I want to compare what happened and what he did with another man who spent not 5 years hiding in the wilderness, but 8 years. Well, specifically 4 years hiding out in the Judean wilderness, and another 4 years in and around Ziklag in Philistine territory. His name was David. Now, David was not only on King Saul's most wanted list, he was at the top of the list. He was the list. Saul did everything he could in his jealous rage and demonic passions to try to kill David. David had been anointed already to be the next king in Israel. But David was a wanted man, a hunted man. Now, I've seen the Judean wilderness, and I'm telling you, there is not anywhere out there that I know of that a person can hide looking at it. There's just nothing there but rocks and sand. If you can't crawl under a rock or in a cave, you're exposed pretty much. He didn't have an Appalachian forest to hide out in. And not only did David feed himself and hide himself in the Judean wilderness for 4 years, but he also hid 400 men and their families there as well. I don't know how you can do that. Well, obviously with God's help he did it. But humanly, that's about an impossible thing. Eric Rudolph didn't fare too well. They say when he was captured, he willingly put out his hands and let him put the cuffs on him. You know, he was ready for something different. How was it that David, though, managed those 8 years? How was it he kept on going? How did he keep from going insane, you might say? How did he not let the pressure get to him? Not only the pressure of avoiding capture and avoiding Saul's army that was hunting him and his men, but taking care of all those people that gathered with him. You know, one time, because of what happened to Ziklag, his own men were ready to stone him. But he endured it all. How was it that David was able, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, to manage? The answer is in Psalm 138. It's not the only place you'll find it, but the answer is certainly in Psalm 138. And the answer is this: he never lost sight of what God had done for him and what God was going to do for him, and he never ceased, he never stopped praising God and rendering thanksgiving to God no matter what his situation was. You see, thanksgiving is more than just manners. It's more than just a please and a thank you that we try to teach our children. It's more than just being appreciative. It's absolutely essential to our spiritual health. It's an absolute crucial factor in our relationship with God. Is your faith weak this morning? Is your spirit impoverished? Is your heart heavy? Give thanks. Being thankful will cure those things. Being thankful will lift you up and strengthen you and sustain you. Giving thanks is the absolute crucial factor in the alleviating of all of your distress. Yes, alleviating your stress and your distress all begins with being thankful. It's good to have a day of thanksgiving. It's wonderful to have a holiday. It's great to get together as a church or get our families together. There's nothing better than turkey and dressing and pumpkin pie, of course. You may have other preferences, but mashed potatoes, gravy, turkey, pumpkin pie, I'm good, you know. And a lot of whipped cream. But giving thanks is vastly more than that. And it needs to be something that is evident in our life every day, all the time. This is what David did as a habit of life and as a necessity of his life. And we see his pattern in Psalm 138, and I want you to see it with me this morning. Here is a pattern for thanksgiving, courtesy of David, Psalm 138. He wrote this psalm, scholars believe, when he was being pursued by King Saul. In those years between his being anointed to be the next king and killing Goliath and serving in Saul's court and then becoming an outcast and fleeing for his life and all of that until the day that Saul was killed in battle. It was during that time that he wrote these words. And herein is a pattern for our thanksgiving. What is that pattern? Well, there are two components that I want you to notice with me this morning. Our pattern for thanksgiving, first of all, should include identifiable characteristics. Identifiable characteristics. Look at verse 1. David says, I will praise thee. Now, the thee here is God, obviously. I will praise thee with my whole heart. The first thing we noticed was that David was thankful in a very sincere way, with his whole heart. His thanksgiving was heartfelt. If we do not feel blessed, if we do not understand the content of God's blessing, the reality of God's blessing in our life day by day, you can go to church every Sunday and we can, so to speak, praise and worship God, but it really doesn't rise to that level. It doesn't rise to the level of real thanksgiving and real praise until it is something that is heartfelt, something that is sincere in our soul. And then I want you to notice that it was not only sincere or heartfelt, but it was also vocal. It was public. Look again at verse 1. I will praise thee with my whole heart. Before the gods will I sing praise unto thee. Now the Hebrew word for sing or sing praise can mean to do so vocally. It can also refer to the playing of an instrument. David did both. In fact, David was accomplished as a musician in every regard. And so his praise, his thanksgiving was not something that was just in his heart, not something that he sincerely felt on the inside, but it was something that was expressed openly and publicly and vocally and musically in every way possible. Now we know that David played the harp. And I can only imagine what it might have been like in those days in which David and his 400 mighty men and their families were gathered together in some lonely place on the backside of the Judean desert. All the comforts of life stripped from them. A rough life indeed. A stressful life. But when the sun began to set and they lit the campfires, David perhaps began to play. Others as well, and they began to sing praises to God. And that kept them going. And when we gather together on Sunday morning, we gather here to worship God. And I know it is a heartfelt experience for us. And I see it on your faces. For everyone, it's a little different. But it always must be a public expression. There's something about doing that together with God's people in the church that brings us joy and brings God joy. Not only is our thanksgiving to be heartfelt, sincere, vocal, but it also is something that is testimonial. Look again at verse 1. I will praise thee with my whole heart before the gods. That's a little G. Now, this is not in any way saying that David believed that there were other gods besides the God. That there were other gods besides Jehovah. No, not at all. But David and his mighty men, moving around in that wilderness, provided a testimonial to others that might be there, traveling through, residing there. For those that did not know what it meant to sincerely worship God and to know the real God, those were people that had their gods, G-O-D-S. Before those that didn't believe in his God, the real God. So the worship of David, the thanksgiving of David and his people were testimonial. It was given before the gods. Interesting to think about it. But back in 1621, I believe it was, Governor Bradford called for a feast of thanksgiving. And I think you recognize who Governor Bradford was, the governor of the Plymouth Colony, the pilgrims who sailed to this country on the Mayflower. At that first Thanksgiving, 1 year after having arrived in Plymouth Colony, there were only about 40 pilgrims, men, women, and children left, less than half of what left England. Many, many lost their lives that first winter in a very harsh climate they weren't used to, without a lot of supplies and such. Less than half of them remained, about 40. But there were nearly 100 Native Americans that gathered with them for that Thanksgiving celebration. And the praise and the thanksgiving they gave to God on that first Thanksgiving was given before the gods. Given before those who never before knew or heard of the God, Jehovah, Elohim, Yahweh, the God of Israel, the one true God, the Most High God. But they heard about him then. Identifiably, our worship, our thanksgiving is giving in corporate settings like the church, and we sincerely praise and thank God. We do so vocally, we do so through music, but we do so day by day in everything we do and say before the gods, the false gods of this world. And it is our attitude of whether or not we, how we see life, whether or not we see it as something to be thankful for, our situation, our circumstances, or whether it's a continual grumbling and complaining about everything. And the world notices. And then finally notice that all thanksgiving, to be thanksgiving, is something that is rendered to God. I will praise thee with my whole heart. Before the gods, I will sing unto thee. I will worship, he says in verse 2, toward thy holy temple. Why did David worship toward the temple? Because he didn't have access to it. The tabernacle in those days. He was on the run in the wilderness, but he didn't forget to worship God. I will worship toward thy holy temple and praise thy name for thy loving kindness and for thy truth. For thou hast magnified thy word above thy name. He rendered thanksgiving to God. Now, what you don't see perhaps here is that the verbs in verses 1 and 2 are Hebrew verbs that indicate that David's thanksgiving, his praise, that which he is talking about doing here, was something that he'd done consistently and continually. It wasn't just sporadic. It wasn't just when he thought about it. It wasn't just when Thanksgiving Day arrived and they brought the turkey out. It was something that he did and he did and he did and he did consistently over his life and every day of his life. Thanksgiving rendered unto God should be rendered consistently. But it also should be rendered our whole lifetime. But even beyond our lifetime. Verse 3 still talks about his time in the wilderness. He says, in the day when I cried, thou answered me and strengthened me with strength in my soul. But verses 4 and 5 suddenly become prophetic. They extend into the future. And they reference the millennial kingdom of Christ, the son of David, who eventually will sit on the throne of David eternally, as was prophesied by Nathan in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And during the millennial kingdom, when Christ rules and reigns over this earth, in verse 5 it says, all the kings of the earth shall praise thee. Now there's only one point in time, only one possible place in the whole scope of history that statement could ever be true, and that's during the millennial reign of Christ on earth. All the kings of the earth shall praise thee, O Lord, when they hear the words of thy mouth. Yea, they shall sing in the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. The thanksgiving we render now in this lifetime is but a preview of what will be rendered, a preview of what we will be doing in the kingdom and throughout eternity. It's a pretty big deal when you think about it. Identifiable characteristics, we see them here. We've covered them, so let's move on. In addition to identifiable characteristics, thanksgiving, the pattern for us, also includes specific content. Specific content. Look with me again at verses 1 and 2. I will praise thee with my whole heart. Before the gods will I sing praise unto thee. So far in verse 1, he doesn't say a thing about why he's praising God. And so we move to verse 2. I will worship toward thy holy temple and praise thy name. Now he begins to give us some reason, some content to his worship. For thy loving kindness, he says, and for thy truth. For thou hast magnified thy word above all thy name. Now the word translated loving kindness is a word that is translated by various English words throughout the Old Testament. Sometimes it's translated by the word mercy. Sometimes by the word faithful or faithfulness. Sometimes it's loving kindness. But it is a Hebrew word that is always used in references to what God has promised to his people. And David is thinking here more of the fact, more than just the fact that God was good to him in the wilderness. But David has in mind the fact that God will come through on all that he's promised. I will, David, in spite of what's going on right now, hiding out here in the Judean desert, in spite of that, I will one day rule in Israel. God has said so. And not only one day will I rule as king in Israel, because God has said so, but a descendant of mine shall rule also throughout eternity, because God has said so. And only Jesus Christ can fulfill that promise and that prophecy. This is what David has in mind. Now, we as the church are different than Israel. But we will participate. And those of us from the church age will participate in the ruling and the reigning over this earth during the millennial kingdom and then on into eternity. So first of all, in regard to content, we have God's faithfulness. God never lets us down. We only let God down. And I want to show you that now. Because the second aspect of content is found in verse 3. He says, in the day when I cried, thou answeredest me, and strengthenest me. Me with strength in my soul. In the day when I was at my lowest point ever, when everything seemed to be against me, when I was just ready to throw in the towel and forget it all, when I was ready to completely give up, then I cried unto thee, Lord, and you strengthened my soul. My friends, if you've never been to that point in your life, you can't fully appreciate what you're reading right here. But for those of us that have, and many of us, I'm sure, could say, I can't imagine being any lower than I was at this time or that time or that point. We could all find some low aspect of our life, some point in time when we were most discouraged, most depressed. And perhaps you too have experienced that crying out to God and how He strengthens your soul. The reason David could persevere, the reason David could go on, the reason David never gave up, he trusted in the faithfulness of God, but when he was at his lowest, he cried out to God in prayer, and God answered his prayer. Notice, God didn't always take away the problem, but he strengthened David to endure the problem. We often miss that point, don't we? The object of focus, the point of our prayer is, because God resolved my problems. The longer I live, the more I find myself praying, God, give me grace to endure my problems. Or pray for this person over here, or this one over here, or that one over there who's going through the trials. Lord, if it be your will, remove the problem. But God, give them grace, give them help, give them strength, lift them up in their soul. For this is what God can do and will do in spite of the problem. He strengthens us in our soul. And then the content of our thanksgiving is not only, should it not only be God's faithfulness and the prayers that He answers, but also His providential care. Look at verse 6. In verse 6 we see the condition that David refers here or puts on this whole prayer life of his and everybody else's. He says this. He says, though the Lord is high, though the Lord be high, yet hath he respect unto the lowly, but the proud he knoweth afar off. You want God to be intimately involved in your life? You want God to be personally involved in answering your prayers? You want to feel the strength of God that comes from the inner reaches of your soul when life is the worst? It requires humility, lowliness. It's when we see ourselves as, you know, I'm too holy, I'm too righteous to suffer like this, or I'm too important to the cause of God to not to be able to do this way, or accomplish this. Lord, why am I not succeeding in life, in work, whatever it is? When we start seeing ourselves in a prideful way, we lose touch with a God who can restore our soul on a daily basis. And He becomes afar off. In verse 7 and 8, we see what happens when we are humble and we go to Him in prayer. In verse 7, though I walk in the midst of trouble, that's where David walked. That's where he was walking when he wrote this. He says, though I walk in the midst of trouble, right in the middle of it. Everywhere I go, there's trouble. Everywhere I end up, trouble surrounds me. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, thou wilt revive me. Thou shalt stretch forth thine hand against the wrath of mine enemies, and thy right hand shall save me. Notice, he didn't say you always take away the trouble, but he says you'll save me out of the trouble. You'll spare my life from Saul who's trying to kill me. You'll revive me in my heart and my soul. Verse 8, he says, the Lord will perfect that which concerneth me. Thy mercy, O Lord, endureth forever. Forsake not the works of thine own hands. Now, in verse 8, he's talking about purpose. In verse 7, he was talking about protection. God would not allow David to be tempted above that which he was able to bear if he would put a New Testament spin on what verse 7 says. But he would revive his soul and give him grace and give him strength in the midst of that trouble. But then in verse 8, he's talking about God's going to fulfill his purpose with my life. He's not only going to protect me and revive me and sustain me, but he's going to also bring about his purpose. And God is bringing about his purpose in your life and mine every day. And we don't like the plan he has sometimes. And we don't like the difficulty that is required for us to go through. For it is only through the traveling of those difficult days and the negotiating of those problems that we face do we grow stronger, do we become more dependent on God and more humble at heart and a greater recipient of his grace. And then through that process, we fulfill his purpose, whatever it is. His purpose as a human being, a child of God, a witness to the power of God and the glory of God and the grace of God, a ministry that he gives to us, the help of the Spirit to use us, that our whole life might glorify him. So it all boils down to this. We must give thanks. Follow David's pattern. Robert McQuilkin, the former president of Columbia International University in Columbia, South Carolina, these are his words. I want to read them to you. He says, "Life was heavy on me. My dearest friend and intimate companion, my delightful wife, Muriel, was slipping away one painful loss at a time as Alzheimer's disease ravaged her brain. Just as the full impact of what was happening to us hit home, the life of Bob, our eldest son, was snuffed out in a diving accident. 2 years later, to care for Muriel, I left my life work at its peak. I was numb, not bitter, let alone angry. Why should I be? That's the way life is. Life is a broken world. But the passion in my love for God had evaporated, leaving a residue of resignation where once had been vibrant faith. I knew that I was in deep trouble. And I did the only thing I knew to do. I went away to a mountain hideaway for prayer. It took me 24 hours to shake free of preoccupation with my own wounds and to focus on the excellencies of God. As I did, slowly, love began to be rekindled, and with love came joy. I wrote God a love letter, naming 41 of his marvelous gifts to me, spotlighting 11 of his grandest acts in history, and exalting in 10 of his characteristics that exceed my imagination. Surely he enjoyed my gratitude. Who doesn't appreciate gratitude? But I discovered something else. Something happened to me. I call it the reflex action of thanksgiving. My love flamed up from the dying embers, and my spirit soared. I discovered that ingratitude impoverishes, but that a heavy heart lifts on the wings of praise.